This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
Good morning, you're listening to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Shazana Mukhtar. Member of Parliament for Simpang Renggam, Dr. Mazli Malik, has been described as the most unpopular minister during his short stint in cabinet as the Minister of Education. He's recently published a book to set the record straight, titled Memory Bukan Memoir, detailing the reforms that he initiated throughout his 20 months as minister. He remains a vocal advocate for education reform as an independent MP and heads the Pakatan Harapan Shadow Committee on Education. Mazli joins me on the show today to discuss the Malaysian education strategy post-pandemic. Welcome to The Breakfast Grill, Mazli.
Thank you, Shazana. Good morning.
Now, you've been quite tight-lipped about your reasons for resigning as education minister last year. So your book is eagerly anticipated by those seeking candid answers. In all honesty, do you actually answer that question in Memory Bukan Memoir, the question of why you resigned?
Actually, if you look at the book, the title itself is self-explanatory. It talks about, not about myself, it's not a memoir, but instead it's a collection of memories of what we aspire the national education to be and what we have done, what we have started, what we have embarked with, and all the visions and the missions that we were working on them during that very brief 20 months. And, I mean, yes, according to Malaysia Kini, according to their polls, they were saying that I was amongst the most unpopular. The minister, despite that, I was the first one to came up with the first 100-day report during the PH administration, the first minister to came up with a report of the 2019 report card of the ministry, and a lot of initiatives that we have done, unfortunately, never been reported in depth and never been given much attention in compared to other unnecessary petty things that will attract a lot of eyeballs to read the news or to watch the headlines. And, you know, yeah, anyway, but let the book speak for itself. Speaks about what we have done within that brief 20-month sojourn that we had there. Not me as a minister, but people as a whole. Because when we went there, we were carrying the vision and the hope of the people.
So by your admission, this book is not meant to be a comprehensive memoir of your time. It doesn't detail every single thing that happened in your 20 months, but it is crafted to focus on the successes, the initiatives that you think should have gotten more attention during your time there.
Yes, definitely. It's not about myself. It's not about me, but about the journey that we have embarked with. All the reform initiatives that we have started, and unfortunately have stopped since the Sheraton move, since the change of the government.
Mm. The book does omit some of the key controversies that you're remembered for. The black shoes,
yes,
policy.
No,
is that why it's
not in the book? No.
Because you don't want people to remember this? You don't want them to think of you, but to think of education policy more broadly?
I want people to pay attention more to what is the most important to the country and not about all those controversies, about myself, about other things. This is the difference between this book and other books written by politicians. And as you know, that until today, I'm still struggling convincing myself that I'm a politician. But anyway, this book, I was trying to explain to people, this is what we have done, this is what we have achieved, this is what we have started with. And hope that whoever comes to the ministry would at least accomplish, if not, they're not accomplishing, please do better than that.
Okay. There were several policies that you started, which were very well received by the public, controversies notwithstanding. You initiated the zero reject policy that ensured access to education for all children, including the stateless and those with special needs. You abolished exam-oriented assessment for lower primary school students, paving the way for more holistic assessment of student learning rather than just on exams. You worked towards alleviating the administrative burden of teachers so that they could focus on the core business of teaching. You initiated infrastructure improvements in over 200 dilapidated schools. So there's a lot of reforms that you started.
More than 700, not 200.
More than 700 schools, 700
yeah,
dilapidated schools.
780-something, yeah.
Okay, all right. I guess my question is, a lot of these reforms were top-level pronouncements, but how far did they go in terms of implementation? You know, were they fully implemented, or did they actually need time to filter down to the different levels? Because it's one thing to announce the changes, which you did, but were they actually followed through during your time there?
Yeah, they were there. And during my time, the most important part of that initiatives, I closely monitor them on a weekly basis. If you still remember, when it comes to the dilapidated schools, we had our own dashboard that not only me, not only the MPs, but the whole Rakyat can monitor the progress of the dilapidated schools repairs and anything relates to them.
Okay.
And not only for the dilapidated schools, other initiatives can be monitored by the Rakyat through the dashboard that I raised a couple of weeks ago in the parliament, that the dashboard is not functioning anymore. And suddenly after I raised that, that very night it's functioning again, and it shows nothing moved.
Mm-hmm. Nothing moved from you, for the time that you were there, you mean?
Unfortunately, yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about your time with the Ministry of Education, because you came in as a first-time MP. You came in without much experience in government, and no doubt you carried out your duties sincerely and with enthusiasm. But in hindsight, do you think that you were the right person for the job of Minister of Education? Or was your inexperience, did that put you on a back foot for most of your tenure?
I'm not sure whether that question is suitable to be imposed to myself or to be answered by me. The one that appointed me was the Prime Minister. I mean, the then Prime Minister. So I think he's the best to answer that question.
But in your case, did you think you were equipped to become the Minister of Education?
No, for me, it's not about myself. It's about people's hope that I'm carrying on my shoulder. Whatever position that I've been given, whatever responsibility I've been given, I'll try my best, even on the expense of my life, to accomplish them for the sake of the country and for the future of the people. The day when I decided to join politics and to leave the comfort zone of academia, I've dedicated myself to the country. Hence, whatever responsibility, whatever task been given to me, you know, I give my life for it.
Can we talk a little bit about coming to work with the civil service of the Ministry of Education? There is a perception that the civil service is opaque, that it has its own way of running things, that it's hard to break old habits. What was your experience with the education civil service during your time there? Did you find it challenging?
I knew, Shazana, the civil servant has got used to a certain way of doing things since the last 60 years. So when the change happened abruptly, you know, quite a shock for them, for many of them. I mean, I would be honest that when they're working with us, they are normal human beings. They have their own suspicion, they have their own prejudices, but again, they are still normal human beings with hearts and feelings. So the 20 months, or in my case, 20 months were not enough for us to convince them and to take them together with us to accomplish all the missions, all the dreams are for the sake of the Rakyat. So if we should have been given more time to convince the civil servant to work with us, to come jump out from their comfort zone and to give their life for the nation, I think we could do wonders and miracles,
mm-hmm.
provided that we're given the whole term and not only 22 months.
Let's come to one of the hot topics of your book. You made some interesting disclosures with regard to the One BestariNet program, which you alluded was one of the reasons why you were forced to resign. From what you detailed, you made the principal decision not to continue with the contract. And as a result, that was one of the reasons why the leadership of the Bersatu Party asked you to step down as education minister. So do you feel you were wronged?
I think I'll explain in length that when the Prime Minister asked me to render back the position to him, then he became the Minister of Education. I think it was an administrative decision on his side. And, you know, as the one who's been appointed by him, so when he asked me to render back the position to him, I think it's normal. I mean, he was the one who appointed me to be in his cabinet. And when he thought that I'm no longer fit enough to accomplish whatever he wanted me to do, then it's fair enough. But for me, you know, I've done my best for the sake of the country. The time was not on my side, and I was having a very poor communication team, and I did not communicate well politically. Yeah.
Okay.
No regret. And I've done, you know, at least the book which speaks for myself.
Do you think the YTL One Bestarinet contract warrants further investigation by MACC, as called for by some of your fellow MPs? Based on what you've detailed in your book, there are a lot of questions that perhaps should be clarified by all stakeholders involved in the contract.
I think the issue is being discussed at the moment by the PAC, and that is we just wait for the PAC to do due diligence and to do their job. And if there is, they could prove something, let them lodge the report to SBRM or any, you know, interested party.
I'm speaking to YB Dr. Mazli Male, Member of Parliament for Simpang Renggam and former Minister of Education. What's the future of post-pandemic education in Malaysia? Stay tuned for his views. BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
Thanks for staying tuned to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Shahzada Mokhtar, and I'm joined by YB Dr. Mazli Male, Member of Parliament for Simpang Renggam and former Minister of Education. We're discussing his latest book, Memori Bukan Memoir, 20 Months of Education Reforms, as well as the post-pandemic education strategy in Malaysia. Mazli, I'd like to turn our attention to the Malaysian Education Blueprint, which is running from 2013 to 2025. And this blueprint was something that you inherited as the education minister when you came to your post in 2018. Looking back, how committed were you to implementing this roadmap, given that it wasn't your brainchild? It was something that was established well before you came into the scene. Did you think that it was fit for purpose even before the pandemic?
I'm not sure whether you have read a chapter in my book, Memori Bukan Memoir, about the Jata Kuasa Kajian Dasar Pendidikan Negara. That was a committee that was set up based on the decision made by the cabinet then to look further into the education system that we had then by taking into consideration the blueprint. You know, the blueprint has a lot of great initiatives, a lot of great things. But again, you know, when time change, you know, people change, a lot of technology emerge after the blueprint came into the picture. So there, I think, the Laporan Jawatan Kuasa Kajian Dasar came as the annex for that blueprint to further improve the blueprint. But again, now, the situation that we are experiencing since the pandemic and the post-pandemic years waiting for us ahead require a lot more changes. And the blueprint is not enough. You know, a lot of changes have to come in. We need to push a great reset button. A lot of initiatives that have been addressed by the blueprint need to be speed up. They need to be further enhanced. So this is where I think I keep calling for a master plan for education, not only for the foundation education, but also for higher education and for TVET. But unfortunately, until today, since last year, I've been calling for this, none has been done by the current government and by the current ministry. So this is where I came up with an alternative plan. In my upcoming book, by early November, inshallah, I will come out with a book, kind of an alternative master plan for our education system that I'm going to present as part of what I understood from the blueprint, what I understood from the Laporan Jawatan Kuasa Kajian Dasar, and what needed to be done based on the experience of other developed countries.
I want to get some specifics from you. Based on that Jawatan Kuasa that you set up, what were some of the changes that you think needed to be done to the Malaysian Education Blueprint in light of the passing of time and the improvement of technology, as you pointed out?
Yeah, we must prepare our future generation to face the very volatile and very challenging future that's waiting for them. A lot of new skills, a lot of new technologies that they need to learn, they need to equip themselves with, and they need to be fairly educated in order to face the post-pandemic situation. And by the way, you can go to my website, mazli.my, I came up with a summary, pernyataan policy or policy review. But again, another thing, when we look at education, we must have a holistic view of education. It cannot be viewed in a very compartmentalized, segmented way. You know, people are looking at education in a purely academic manner, where else you should inculcate TVET, for example, morals, sports, and technologies, skills, and all those sorts of things. And all been discussed in that Laporan Jatakosa and in my book, Memorable Kan Memoir, and in my upcoming book. And if you notice, in most of my speeches in the parliament, I keep addressing this holistic approach of education rather than looking at it in a very segmentized way.
I feel like the argument for a holistic viewpoint of education is something that's been long championed by many educationists and pretty much everyone who believes in education, right? Everyone believes that there must be a holistic approach. So what makes your strategy different?
What makes my strategy different is I'm trying to implement it. I was trying to implement it. I was trying to take people away from an exam-oriented education into a more holistic way to appreciate the potentials of every single children, of every single individual. And this is where the education comes in. And it must come along with values. So this is where it is different from others.
Okay.
So if you still remember, I kept pushing for free breakfast for every sekolah rendah children. Actually, it's not only about breakfast. It's not only enriching them with healthy foods, but also to teach them values, to teach them the way of life, how they prepare the foods together and how they eat together. And how they recycle the waste. All those things we want to inculcate within the life of students, even at the very early stage.
Okay, Mazi, can I draw attention to another policy proposal that you've made, which is you've also called for
do.
The establishment of the National Action Council for Education. You've set up many committees when you were in cabinet. You mentioned the Jawatan Kuasa Kajian Dasar Pendidikan. There was also the National Education Advisory Council, which aimed to bring in different perspectives into education issues. How would yet another council be different this time around? How can it be made more effective?
It's interesting. Those councils that you mentioned were established during my time. But now we don't have any council there. So this is where I came up with this idea that, you know, if we are worried about the situation, the condition of our economy, we should be equally worried about the condition of our education. And from what I see, the ministry now is not proactive enough doing something to salvage, to save our children. So this is where I thought, rather than giving the whole hope in the hands of the ministry, it is better to get those outside the ministry, the professionals, you know, the academics, and those people with experience, even the corporate figures. They need to come in to help us to come up with a master plan for our education post-pandemic. Because, you know, when COVID came, we have wasted nearly 2 years of our children's age. And, you know, I'm not sure whether people have any hope on our education anymore. So this is where we need a new fresh start to create hope within people's hearts and to create a real hope within the nation's hearts.
The Malaysian Education Blueprint itself took 2 years to come up with, Mazli. Would it be logical to say that this master plan you're proposing would also take that amount of time?
No, I don't think so. We don't need to reinvent the wheel. The wheel is already there, but it needs some adjustment. It needs some repair. So this is where the Council for Education comes in. And at the moment, we still have not seen any master plan for our education post-pandemic. This is where I think we need that council that comprises of a lot of people from different segments of life. And this is what been decreed by Yang di-Pertuan Agong in his cita during the opening of Parliament. But unfortunately, until today, the government or the ministry has not come up with any master plan for our education for the post-pandemic period.
Okay, yeah. So you definitely want to see the ministry come up with some kind of plan or strategy on how the education system will change post-pandemic. And
It's not only me. It's the people. I think people is waiting for that. People is eagerly waiting for the ministry to do something which is more meaningful, which is more significant for our education.
Okay. I want to go to a slightly different topic, and this is regarding the Malaysian education landscape. We have national public schools, we have national vernacular schools, we have private schools, we have international schools, we have TAFE schools. There's just so many different types of schools, and all of them seem to have separate oversight bodies. So does this create disparities in educational attainment? Do you think there's enough oversight to ensure that all these education avenues provide a solid foundation for Malaysian children?
This is a very interesting question. You know, this one, we have inherited it nearly a century ago. So this is where I think the Lapora Jatah Kuasa Dasar came into the picture by looking into the blueprint and what they have missed. So the Lapora Jatah Kuasa came to fill in the blank with regard all these mismatch things that you have mentioned. It's all there. I don't think I want to spell everything here, but I will come up with another book explaining what we aspire and what we wanted to do with what we call as the new education model, which I think is the germ of the Lapora Jawatan Kuasa.
Masli, was this Lapora Jawatan Kuasa debated in any public avenues? Was it made known to the public? Was it debated in Parliament? Where can the public maybe read this Lapora Jawatan Kuasa?
It's very unfortunate. I'm supposed to present it to the cabinet, but, you know, the rest is history. Mm. And after my predecessor took place, nothing happened. And when the new government came in with the new minister, they have no interest in it. The very germ of that Lapuran is the new education model that deserves to be presented to the public. But unfortunately, that document has been classified as, you know, government document. So I'm not in position to expose it. But the major idea is still there and can still be debated. But I'm not sure what's the use of debating something that you cannot implement it.
Mm. Would anyway, this be part of your book?
In my upcoming book, not this upcoming one, but the later one, I will discuss about the new education model as proposed by the Lapora Jatah Kuasa. In that Lapora, especially in that new education model, amongst others, talking about the 12 compulsory years of education, talking about single entry to tertiary education, talking about the merge between streams, and talking about TVET becoming part of the mainstream education.
Okay, so it really was quite a comprehensive overhaul, if only it had been able to be tabled and implemented.
It's going to be a game changer, but unfortunately, you know, the rest is history.
Indeed it is. And Masli, we're running out of time. We focused our conversation mostly on basic schooling, primary, secondary schooling. Hopefully we'll have you back on again to look more broadly at higher education reforms, which I think warrants a separate conversation all on its own. But while I have you, let's talk a little bit about your political future. You are a first-time MP and you remain an independent MP aligned to Pakatan Harapan at this moment. Are you planning to defend your seat in GE15? And will this be as an independent or will you join a party?
Okay, at the moment, I'm still striving my best to serve my constituents and to fight for the education of the country. So whatever remaining months ahead for me, I'm dedicating myself and dedicating my life for these two purposes. Number one, to serve for the best interest of my constituents, and number two, to strive for education.
So you don't know whether you're going to run in GE15?
Definitely, I will stay in Chempaurenggam to further develop it and to make it known to the world.
Okay, so you are and going to defend your seat.
Yeah, and I will finish what I started.
Okay.
By the way, the word you use, independent aligned to Pakatan Harapan, is not really accurate. I would say, and this is what the parliament has agreed to design me, independent within Pakatan Harapan.
In that case, Masli, why stay an independent? Because with the party, you would actually have access to their political machinery, including their outreach to grassroots, right? So there seems to be a lot more advantage to be part of a party rather than being an independent in this Pakatan Harapan coalition.
Mind you, Pakatan Harapan has been registered with SPR as a party, and Pakatan Harapan is my party.
So you would tap into their election machinery when GE15 comes around?
Inshallah.
All right then, Mazli, on that note, thank you so much for speaking with me today.
My pleasure.
I've been speaking to YB Dr. Mazli Malik, Member of Parliament for Simpang Renggam and former Minister of Education. This has been The Breakfast Grill, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.